"What is all this now?" Feldegast laughed, suddenly coming forward until he stood between Geryon and his foes. "Surely, good masters, we can put aside all this hatred and strife. I'll tell you what I'll do. Let me give you a demonstration of me skill, and we'll laugh together and make peace between us once and for all. No man at all can keep so great a hatred in his heart while he's bubbling with laughter, don't you know?"
And then he began to juggle, seeming to pull brightly colored balls out of the air. The Grolems gaped at him, stunned by this unexpected interruption, and Geryon stared incredulously at the performer, who seemed deliberately bent on self-destruction. Still juggling, Feldegast flipped his body onto the back of a heavy bench, holding himself upside down over it, with one hand, while he continued to juggle with his free hand and his feet. Faster and faster the balls whirled, more and more of them coming, it seemed, out of thin air. The more the balls whirled, the brighter they became, until at last they were incandescent, and the inverted little man was juggling balls of pure fire. Then he flexed the arm that was holding him in place, tossing himself high over the bench. When his feet touched the floor, however, it was no longer Feldegast the juggler who stood there. In place of the roguish entertainer stood the gnarled, hunchbacked shape of the sorcerer, Belden. With a sudden evil laugh, he began to hurl his fireballs at the startled Grolems and their warriors. His aim was unerring, and the deadly fireballs pierced Grolem robes, guardsmen's mail coats, and Kerendi's fur vests with equal facility. Smoking holes appeared in the chests of his victims, and he felled them by the dozen. The throne room filled with smoke and the reek of burning flesh as the grinning, ugly little sorcerer continued his deadly barrage.
"You!"
Ervan shrieked in terror. The sudden appearance of the man he had feared for so many thousands of years, shocking him into some semblance of sanity, even as the terrified Kandam and their cohorts broke and fled, howling with fright.
"Ah, so good to see you again, Ervan," the hunchback said to him pleasantly. "Our conversation was interrupted the last time we were talking, but as I recall, I had just promised to sink a white-hot hook into your belly and yank out all of your guts."
He held out his gnarled right hand, snapped his fingers, and there was a sudden flash. A cruel hook, smoking and glowing, appeared in his fist.
"Why don't we continue with that line of thought?" he suggested, advancing on the splotchy-faced man cowering on the throne.
Then the shadow, which had lurked behind the madman's shoulder, came out from behind the throne.
"Stop,"
it said in a voice that was no more than a crackling whisper. No human throat could have produced that sound.
"I need this thing,"
it said, pointing a shadowy hand in the direction of the gibbering disciple of Torak.
"It serves my purposes, and I will not let you kill it." "You would be Nehaz, then," Belden said in an ominous voice. "I am," the figure whispered. "Nehaz, Lord of Demons, Master of Darkness."
"Go find yourself another plaything, demon lord," the hunchback grated. "This one is mine."
"Will you pit your will against mine, sorcerer?"
"If need be."
"Look upon my face, then, and prepare for death."
The demon pushed back its hood of darkness, and Geryon recoiled with a sharp intake of his breath. The face of Nehaz was hideous. But it was not the misshapen features alone which were so terrifying. There emanated from its burning eyes a malevolent evil so gross that it froze the blood. Brighter and brighter those eyes burned with evil green fire until their beams shot forth toward Belden. The gnarled sorcerer clenched himself and raised one hand. The hand suddenly glowed an intense blue, a light that seemed to cascade down over his body to form a shield against the demon's power.
"Your will is strong," Nehaz hissed,
but mine is stronger.
Then Polgara came down the littered aisle, the white lock at her brow gleaming. On one side of her strode Belgarath, and on the other Durnik. As they reached him, Geryon joined them. They advanced slowly to take up positions flanking Beldon, and Geryon became aware that Eriond had also joined them, standing slightly off to one side.
"Well, demon," Polgara said in a deadly voice, "will you face us all?"
Geryon raised his sword and unleashed its fire.
"And this as well?"
he added, releasing all restraints on the orb. The demon flinched momentarily, then drew itself erect again, its horrid face bathed in that awful green fire. From beneath its robe of shadow, it took what appeared to be a scepter or a wand of some kind that blazed an intense green. As it raised that wand, however, it seemed to see something that had previously escaped its notice. An expression of sudden fear crossed its hideous face, and the fire of the wand died, even as the intense green light bathing its face flickered and grew wan and weak. Then it raised its face toward the vaulted ceiling and howled, a dreadful, shocking sound. It spun quickly, moving toward the terrified Erlon. It reached out with shadowy hands, seized the gold-robed madman, and lifted him easily from the throne. Then it fled, its fire pushing out before it like a great battering ram, blasting out the walls of the House of Torak as it went. The crown, which had surmounted Ervon's brow, fell from his head as Nahas carried him from the crumbling house, and it clanked when it hit the floor with the tinny sound of brass. Part 4. The Mountains of Samad. Chapter 19. Beldon spat out a rancid oath and hurled his glowing hook at the throne. Then he started toward the smoking hole the fleeing demon had blasted out through the wall of the throne room. Belgarath, however, managed to place himself in front of the angry hunchback.
"No, Beldon," he said firmly. "Get out of my way, Belgarath."
"I'm not going to let you chase after a demon who could turn on you at any minute."
"I can take care of myself. Now stand aside."
"You are not thinking, Beldon. There will be time enough to deal with Ervon later. Right now we need to make some decisions."
"What's to decide? You go after Zandromos, and I go after Ervon. It's all pretty much cut and dried, isn't it?"
"Not entirely. In any event, I am not going to let you chase after Nahas in the dark. You know as well as I do that the darkness multiplies his power, and I haven't got so many brothers left that I can afford to lose one just because he's irritated."
Their eyes locked, and the ugly hunchback finally turned away. He stumped back toward the dais, pausing long enough to kick a chair to pieces on his way, muttering curses all the while.
"Is everyone all right?" Silk asked, looking around as he resheathed his knife.
"So it would seem," Polgara replied, pushing back the hood of her blue cloak.
"It was a bit tight there for a while, wasn't it?"
The little man's eyes were very bright.
"Also unnecessary," she said, giving Geryon a hard look. "You had better take a quick look through the rest of the house, Keldar. Let's make sure that it's really empty. Durnik, you and Toth go with him."
Silk nodded. Silk nodded, and started back up the blood-splashed aisle, stepping over the bodies as he went. Durnik and Toth were close behind.
"I don't understand," Tenedra said,
staring in bafflement at the gnarled Beldon, who was once again dressed in rags and had the usual twigs and bits of straw clinging to him.
"How did you change places with Feldegast? And where is he?"
A roguish smile crossed Beldon's face.
"Ah, me little darling," he said to her in a juggler's lilting brogue. "I'm right here, don't you know? And if you're of a mind, I can still charm you with me wit and me unearthly skill."
"But I liked Feldegast,"
she almost wailed.
"All you have to do is transfer your affection to me, darling."
"It's not the same,"
she objected. Belgarath was looking steadily at the twisted sorcerer.
"Have you got any idea of how much that particular dialect irritates me?"
"Why, yes, brother," Belden grinned. "As a matter of fact, I do. That's one of the reasons I selected it."
"I don't entirely understand the need for so elaborate a disguise," Zadi said, as he put away his small poisoned dagger.
"Too many people know me by sight in this part of Malor," Belden told him. "Ervon's had my description posted on every tree and fence post within 100 leagues of Malyaska for the last 2,000 years. And let's be honest about it. It wouldn't be too hard to recognize me from even the roughest description."
"You are a unique sort of person, Uncle," Polgara said to him, smiling fondly.
"Oh, you're too kind to say it, me girl," he replied with an extravagant bow.
"Will you stop that?" Belgarath said. Then he turned to Geryon. "As I remember, you said that you were going to explain something later." "All right. It's later."
"I was tricked," Geryon admitted glumly.
"By whom?"
"Zandramas." "She's still here?" Sinedra exclaimed.
Geryon shook his head. "No. She sent a projection here, a projection of herself and of Geryon."
"Couldn't you tell the difference between a projection and the real thing?" Belgarath demanded.
"I wasn't in any condition to tell the difference when it happened."
"I suppose you can explain that."
Geryon took a deep breath and sat down on one of the benches. He noticed that his blood-stained hands were shaking.
"Oh, she's very clever. Ever since we left Malzeth, I've been having the same dream over and over again."
"Dream?" Bulgara asked sharply.
"What kind of dream?"
"Maybe dream isn't the right word. But over and over again I keep hearing the cry of a baby. At first I thought that I was remembering the cry of that sick child we saw in the streets back in Malzeth."
"Oh, but that wasn't it at all.
When Silk and Belden and I were in that room just above this one, we could see down into the throne room here, and we saw Ervon come in with Nehaz right behind him. He's completely insane now. He thinks he's a god. Anyway, he summoned Minga, only Minga turned out to be Herakon, and then..."
"Wait a minute," Belgarath interrupted him. "Herakon is Minga."
Geryon glanced over at the limp form sprawled in front of the altar. Zith was still coiled atop the black stone, muttering and hissing to herself.
"Well, he was."
"Ervon made the announcement before all of this broke out. We didn't have the time to fill you in."
"Oh, that explains a great many things, doesn't it?" Belgarath mused.
He looked at Velvet.
"Did you know about this?"
"No, Ancient One," she replied. "As a matter of fact, I didn't. I just seized the opportunity when it arose."
Silk, Durnik, and Toth came back into the body-strewn throne room.
"The house is empty," the little man reported.
"We've got it all to ourselves."
"Good," Belgarath said.
"Geryon was just telling us why he saw fit to start his own private war."
"Zandramas told him to," Silk shrugged.
"I'm not sure why he started taking orders from her, but that's what happened." "I was just getting to that," Geryon said. "Ervon was down here telling all of the Khandom that Herakon, Minga, was going to be his first disciple. That's when Zandramas came in, or at least she seemed to. She had a bundle under her cloak. I didn't know it at first, but it was Geryon. She and Ervon shouted at each other for a while, and Ervon finally insisted that he was a god. She said something like, 'All right, then I will summon the Godslayer to deal with you,' and that's when she put the bundle on the altar. She opened it, and it was Geryon. He started to cry, and I realized all at once that it was his cry I'd been hearing all along. I just totally stopped thinking at that point."
"Obviously," Belgarath said.
"Well, anyway, you know all of the rest.
Geryon looked around at the corpse-littered throne room and shuddered. I hadn't altogether realized just how far things went. I guess I was sort of crazy.
The word is berserk, Geryon, Belgoroth told him. It's fairly common among Aelorns. I had sort of thought you might be immune. But I guess I was wrong.
There was some justification for it, Father, Bulgara said.
There is never justification for losing your wits, Paul.
He was provoked. She pursed her lips thoughtfully, then came over and lightly placed her hands on Geryon's temples. It's gone now.
What is?
Synedra sounded concerned. The possession.
Possession?
Bulgara nodded. Yes, that's how Xandramos tricked him. She filled his mind with the sound of a crying child. Then, when she laid the bundle that seemed to be Geryon on the altar, and Geryon heard that same crying, he had no choice but to do what she wanted him to do.
She looked at Belgoroth.
This is very serious, Father. She has already tampered with Xenedra, and now it's Geryon. She may try the same thing with others as well.
What would be the point? You can catch her at it, can't you?
Usually, yes. If I know what's going on. But Xandramos is very skilled at this, and she's very subtle. In many ways, she is even better at it than Asherak the Marco was.
She looked around them.
Now listen carefully, all of you. If anything unusual begins to happen to you, dreams, notions, peculiar ideas, strange feelings, anything at all, I want you to tell me about it at once. Xandramos knows that we are after her, and she is using this to delay us. She tried it with Xenedra while we were on our way to Rakhaga, and now...
Me?
Xenedra said in amazement.
I did not know that.
Remember your illness on the road from Rakverkat? It was not exactly an illness. It was Xandramos putting her hand on your mind.
But nobody told me.
Once Andal and I drove Xandramos away, there was no need to worry you about it. Anyway, Xandramos tried it first with Xenedra and now with Geryon. She could try it on any one of the rest of us as well, so let me know if you start feeling in the least bit peculiar.
Brass, Dernick said.
What was that, dear?
Bulgara asked him. He held up Irvon's crown. Well, this thing is brass. So that throne is, too. I didn't really think there'd be any gold left here. The house has been abandoned and wide open for looters for too many centuries. That's usually the way it is with the gifts of demons, Belden told him. Oh, they're very good at creating illusions. He looked around. Irvon probably saw all of this as unearthly splendor. He couldn't see the rotten drapes or the cobwebs or all of the trash on the floor. All he could see was the glory that Nehaz wanted him to see.
The dirty, twisted man chuckled.
I sort of enjoy the idea of Irvon spending his last days as a raving lunatic, right up until the moment when I sink a hook into his guts.
Silk had been looking narrowly at Velvet. Do you suppose you can explain something for me?
I'll try.
You said something rather strange when you threw Zith into Hrekkan's face.
Did I say something?
You said, a present for the leader of the bear cult, from Hunter.
Oh, that!
She smiled her dimples into life.
I just wanted him to know who was killing him, that's all.
He stared at her.
You are getting rusty, my dear Galdar. I was certain that you would have guessed by now. I've done everything but hit you over the head with it.
Hunter, he said incredulously.
You? I've been Hunter for quite some time now. That's why I hurried to catch up with you at Tol Hanath.
She smoothed the front of her plain gray traveling gown. At Tol Hanath, you told us that Bethra was Hunter.
She had been Geldar. But her job was finished. She was supposed to make sure that we would get a reasonable man as a successor to Ran Borun. First, she had to eliminate a few members of the Honneth family before they could consolidate their positions, and then she made a few suggestions about Varana to Ranbarun. Well, the two of them were...
She hesitated, glancing at Zinedra, and then she coughed.
Shall we say, entertaining each other?
Zinedra blushed furiously.
Oh, dear,
the blonde girl said, putting one hand to her cheek.
That didn't come out at all well, did it? Anyway,
she hurried on,
Javelin decided that Bethra's task was complete, and that it was time for there to be a new hunter with a new mission. Queen Porin was very cross about what Herrigan did in the West, the attempt on Sinedra's life, the murder of Brand, and everything that went on at Rehon. So she instructed Javelin to administer some chastisement. He selected me to deliver it. I was fairly sure that Herrigan would come back to Meloria. I knew that you were all coming here, too, eventually, so that's why I joined you.
She looked over at the sprawled form of Herrigan.
I was absolutely amazed when I saw him standing in front of the altar,
she admitted.
But I couldn't allow an opportunity like that to slip by,
she smiled.
Actually, it worked out rather well. I was just on the verge of leaving you and going back to Malyaska to look for him. The fact that he turned out to be Minga, too, was just sort of a bonus.
I thought that you were tagging along to keep an eye on me.
I'm very sorry, Prince Keldar. I just made that up. I needed some reason to join you, and sometimes Belgarath can be very stubborn.
She smiled winsomely at the old sorcerer, then turned back to the baffled-looking Silk.
Actually, she continued, my uncle is not really upset with you at all.
But you said,
he stared at her.
You lied, he accused.
Lie is such an ugly word, Keldar,
she replied, patting his cheek fondly.
Couldn't we just say that I exaggerated a trifle? I wanted to keep an eye on you, certainly, but it was for reasons of my own, which had nothing whatsoever to do with Drasnian state policy.
A slow flush crept up his cheeks.
Why, Keldar,
she exclaimed delightedly,
you are actually blushing, almost like a simple village girl who's just been seduced.
Geryon had been struggling with something.
What was the point of it, Aunt Paul? What Zandramos did to me, I mean.
Delay, she replied.
But more importantly, there was the possibility of defeating us before we ever get to the final meeting.
I don't follow that.
We know that one of us is going to die. Taradas told us that at Rehon. But there's always a chance that in one of these random skirmishes, someone else could be killed entirely by accident. If the Child of Light, you, meets with the Child of Dark, and he has lost someone whose task has not been completed, he won't have any chance of winning. Zandramos could win by default. The whole point of that cruel game she played was to lure you into a fight with the Kandam and Nehaz. The rest of us quite obviously would come to your aid. In that kind of fight, it's always possible for accidents to happen.
Accident? How can there be accidents when we are all under the control of a prophecy?
You're forgetting something, Belgarion, Belden said. This whole business started with an accident. That's what divided the prophecies in the first place. You can read prophecies until your hair turns gray, but there's always room for a random chance to step in and disrupt things.
You will note that my brother is a philosopher, Belgarath said, always ready to look on the dark side of things.
Are you two really brothers?
Zinedra asked curiously.
Yes, Belden told her, but in a way that you could never begin to understand. It was something that our master impressed upon us.
And Sedar was also one of your brothers?
She suddenly stared in horror at Belgarath. The old man set his jaw.
Yes, he admitted.
But you...
Go ahead.
Say it, Zinedra. There is nothing you can possibly say to me that I have not already said to myself.
Someday,
she said in a very small voice.
Someday, when this is all over, will you let him out?
Belgorath's eyes were stony. I don't think so. No.
And if he does let him out, I'll go find him and stuff him right back in again, Belden added.
There is not much point in chewing over ancient history, Belgorath said. He thought a moment and then said, I think it is time for us to have another talk with the young lady from Kell. He turned to Toth. Will you summon your mistress?
The giant's face was not happy. When he finally nodded, it was obviously with some reluctance.
I am sorry, my friend, Belgorath said to him, but it's really necessary.
Toth sighed, and then he sank to one knee and closed his eyes in an oddly prayerful fashion. Once again, as it had happened back on the Isle of Verkat, and again at Rahaga, Geryon heard a murmur as of many voices. Then there came that peculiar multicolored shimmering in the air, not far from Irvon's shoddy throne. The air cleared, and the unwavering form of the Seeress of Kell appeared on the dais. For the first time, Geryon looked closely at her. She was slender and somehow looked very vulnerable, a helplessness accentuated by her white robe and her blindfolded eyes. There was, however, a serenity in her face, the serenity of someone who has looked full in the face of destiny and has accepted it without question or reservation. For some reason, he felt almost overcome with awe in her radiant presence.
Thank you for coming, Zaratus, Belgorath said simply. I am sorry to have troubled you. I know how difficult it is for you to do this, but there are some answers I need before we can go any further.
I will tell thee as much as I am permitted to say, Ancient One.
Her voice was light and musical, but there was nonetheless a firmness in it that spoke of an unearthly resolve.
I must say unto thee, however, that thou must make haste. The time for the final meeting draws nigh.
That is one of the things I wanted to talk about. Can you be any more specific about this appointed time?
She seemed to consider it, as if consulting with some power so immense that Geryon's imagination shuddered back from the very thought of it.
I know not time in thy terms, holy Belgorath, but only for so long as a babe lieth beneath his mother's heart, remains to you, ere the child of light and the child of dark must face each other in the place which is no more, and my task must be completed.
All right, that's clear enough, I guess. Now, when you came to us at Malzeth, you said that there was a task here at Ashaba that needed to be accomplished before we could move on. A great deal has happened here, so I cannot pinpoint exactly what the task was. Can you be a bit more specific?
The task is completed, Eternal One, for the Book of the Heavens saith that the Huntress must find her prey and bring him low in the House of Darkness in the 16th moon. And lo, even as the stars have proclaimed, it hath come to pass.
The old man's face took on a slightly puzzled expression.
Ask further, disciple of Alder. My time with you grows short.
I am supposed to follow the trail of the mysteries, but Zandramas cut certain key passages out of the copy of the Ashabin oracles she left here for me to find.
Nay, Ancient One, it was not the hand of Zandramas which mutilated thy book, but rather the hand of its author.
Torak? He sounded startled.
Even so. For know thou that the words of prophecy came unbidden, and oft-times their import is not pleasing unto the prophet. So it was with the master of this house.
But Zandramas managed to put her hands on a copy that had not been mutilated.
The seeress nodded.
Are there any other copies that Burnt Face didn't tamper with?
Only two, she replied. One is in the house of Irvan the Disciple, but that one lieth under the hand of Nahaz the Accursed. Seek not to wrest it from him, lest you die.
And the other? The hunchback demanded.
Seek out the club-footed one, for he will aid thee in thy search.
Well, that's not too helpful, you know.
I speak to thee in the words that stand in the book of the heavens, and were written ere the world began. These words have no language, but speak instead directly to the soul.
Oh, naturally. All right, you spoke of Nahaz. Is he going to line our path with demons all the way across Caranda?
Nay, gentle Belden. Nahaz hath no further interest in Caranda, and his legions of darkness abide no longer there, and respond to no summons, however powerful. They infest instead the plains of Darshiva, where they do war upon the minions of Zandramos.
Where is Zandramos now? Belgaroth asked her.
She doth journey unto the place where the Sardian lay hidden for unnumbered centuries. Though it is no longer there, she hopes to find traces of it, sunk into the very rocks, and to follow those traces to the place which is no more.
Is that possible?
Her face grew very still.
That I may not tell thee.
Then she straightened.
I may say no more unto thee in this place, Belgarath. Seek instead the mystery which will guide thee. Make haste, however, for time will not stay nor falter in its measured pace.
Then she turned toward the black altar, standing before the dais where Zith was coiled, still muttering and hissing in irritation.
Be tranquil, little sister, she said. For the purpose of all thy days is now accomplished, and that which was delayed may now come to pass.
She then seemed, even though blindfolded, to turn her serene face toward each of them, pausing briefly only to bow her head to Polgara in a gesture of profound respect. At last she turned to Toth. Her face was filled with anguish, but she said nothing. Then she sighed and vanished. Belden was scowling.
Well, that was fairly standard. I hate riddles. They're the entertainment of the pre-literate.
Stop trying to show off your education, and let's see if we can sort this thing out. We know that this is all going to be decided one way or the other in 9 more months. That was the number I needed.
Tzadi was frowning with perplexity.
How did we arrive at that number? To be perfectly frank, I did not understand very much of what she said.
She said that we have only as much time as a baby lies in its mother's womb. That's 9 months,
Polgara explained.
Oh,
he said. Then he smiled a bit sadly.
That's the sort of thing I don't pay too much attention to, I guess.
What was that business about the 16th moon? Silk asked. I didn't follow that at all.
This whole thing began with the birth of Belgarion's son, Belden told him. We found a reference to that in the Marin Codex. Your friend with the snake had to be here at Asheba 16 moons later.
Silk frowned, counting on his fingers.
It hasn't been 16 months yet.
Moons, Keldar, the hunchback said. Moons, not months. There's a difference, you know.
Oh, that explains it, I guess.
Who is this Clubfoot, who is supposed to have the third uncorrupted copy of the oracles?
Belgarath said.
It rings a bell somehow. Let me think about it.
What is Nahaz doing in Darshiva?
Geryon asked.
Apparently attacking the Grolems there. We know that Darshiva is where Zandramos originally came from, and that the church in that region belongs to her. If Nahaz wants to put the Sardian in Irvan's hands, he is going to have to stop her. Otherwise, she will get to it first.
Zenedra seemed to suddenly remember something. She looked at Geryon, her eyes hungry.
You said that you saw Geryon when Zendromas tricked you?
A projection of him, yes.
How did he look?
The same. He hadn't changed a bit since the last time I saw him.
Geryon, dear, Bulgara said gently.
That's not really reasonable, you know. Geryon's almost a year older now. He would not look the same at all. Babies grow and change a great deal during their first few years.
He nodded glumly.
I realize that now. At the time, I wasn't really in any condition to think my way through it.
Then he stopped.
Why didn't she project an image of him the way he looks now?
Because
she wanted to show you something she was sure that you would recognize.
Now you stop that,
Tsadi exclaimed. He was standing near the altar, and he had just jerked his hand back out of Zith's range. The little green snake was growling ominously at him. The eunuch turned toward Velvet.
Do you see what you have done? He accused. You have made her terribly angry.
Me?
She asked innocently.
How would you like to be pulled out of a warm bed and thrown into somebody's face?
I suppose I hadn't thought about that. I will apologize to her, Tsadi, just as soon as she regains her composure. Will she crawl into her bottle by herself?
Usually, yes.
That might be the safest course, then. Lay the bottle on the altar and let her crawl inside and sulk a bit.
You're probably right, he agreed.
Are any of the other rooms in this house habitable? Bulgara asked Silk.
He nodded. More or less. The Candom and the guardsmen were staying in them.
She looked around at the corpse-littered throne room. Why don't we move out of here, then? She suggested to Belgarath. This place looks like a battlefield, and the smell of blood is not all that pleasant.
Why bother?
Zenedra said.
We are leaving to follow Zendromas, aren't we?
Not until morning, dear, Polgara replied. It is dark and cold outside, and we are all tired and hungry.
But the Candom and the guardsmen ran away, Zenedra. But we cannot be at all sure how far they went. And of course there are the hounds as well. Let's not make the mistake of blundering out into a forest at night when we cannot see what might be hiding behind the first tree we come to.
It makes sense, Zenedra, Velvet told her.
Let's try to get some sleep and start out early in the morning.
The little queen sighed.
I suppose you're right,
she admitted.
It's just that...
Zendromas can't get away from me, Zenedra,
Geryon assured her.
The orb knows which way she went.
They followed Silk out of the throne room and along the blood-spattered corridor outside. Geryon tried as best he could to shield Zenedra from the sight of the crumpled forms, the dead guardsmen and Kerens that he had killed in his raging dash to the throne room of Torak. About halfway down the corridor, Silk pushed open a door and held up the guttering torch he had taken from one of the iron rings sticking out of the wall.
This is about the best that I can do, he told Bulgara. At least someone made an effort to clean it up.
She looked around. The room had the look of a barracks. Bunks protruded from the walls, and there was a long table with benches in the center. There was a fireplace at the far end, with the last embers of a fire glowing inside.
Adequate, she said.
I'd better go look after the horses, Durnick said. Is there a stable anywhere on the grounds?
It's down at the far end of the courtyard, Belden told him. And the guardsmen who were here probably put in a supply of fodder and water for their own mounts.
Good, Durnick said.
Would you bring in the packs with my utensils in the stores, dear?
Bulgara asked him.
Of course.
And then he went out, followed by Toth and Eriond.
Suddenly I'm so tired that I can barely stand, Geryon said, sinking onto a bench.
I wouldn't be surprised at all. Belden grunted. You've had a busy evening.
Are you coming along with us? Belgorath asked him.
No, I don't think so, Belden replied, sprawling on the bench. I want to find out where Nahaz took Irvon.
Will you be able to follow him?
Oh, yes, Belden tapped his nose. I can smell a demon 6 days after he passes. I'll trail Nahaz just like a bloodhound. I won't be gone too long. You go ahead and follow Zandramas, and I'll catch up with you somewhere along the way.
The hunchback rubbed at his jaw thoughtfully.
I think we can be fairly sure that Nahaz is not going to let Irvon out of his sight. Irvon is, or was, a disciple of Torak, after all. Even as much as I detest him, I still have to admit that he's got a very strong mind. Nahaz is going to have to talk to him almost constantly to keep his sanity from returning. So, if our demon lord went to Darshiva to oversee his creatures there, he's almost certain to have taken Irvon along.
You will be careful, won't you?
Oh, don't get sentimental on me, Belgorath. Just leave me some kind of a trail I can follow. I don't want to have to look all over Meloria for you.
Sadi came from the throne room with his red leather case in one hand, and Zith's little bottle in the other.
She is still very irritated, he said to Velvet. She doesn't appreciate being used as a weapon.
I told you that I would apologize to her, Zadi. I will explain things to her. I am sure that she will understand.
Silk was looking at the blonde girl with an odd expression.
Tell me, didn't it bother you at all the first time you put her down the front of your dress?
She laughed.
To be perfectly honest with you, Prince Keldar, the first time, it was all I could do to keep from screaming.
Chapter 20. At first light the following morning, a light that was little more than a lessening of the darkness of a sky where dense clouds scudded before the chill wind blowing down from the mountains, Silk returned to the room in which they had spent the night.
The house is being watched, he told them.
How many are there? Belgorath asked.
I saw one. Oh, I'm sure there are others.
Where is he?
The one that you saw.
Silk's quick grin was vicious.
He is watching the sky. At least, he looks like he's watching. His eyes are open, and he's lying on his back.
He slid his hand down to his boot, pulled out one of his daggers, and looked sorrowfully at its once keen edge.
Do you have any idea of how hard it is to push a knife through a chainmail shirt?
I think that's why people wear them, Keldar,
Velvet said to him.
You should use one of these.
From somewhere amongst her soft feminine clothing, she drew out a long bladed poniard with a needle-like point.
I thought you were partial to snakes.
Always use the appropriate weapon, Keldar. I certainly would not want Zith to break her teeth on a steel shirt.
Could you two talk business some other time? Belgorath said to them. Can you put a name to this fellow who is suddenly so interested in the sky?
We didn't really have time to introduce ourselves, Silk replied, sliding his jagged-edged knife back into his boot.
I meant what, not who.
Oh, well, he was a temple guardsman.
Not one of the Kandim.
All I had to go by was his clothing.
Belgorath's only comment was a grunt.
It's going to be slow going if we have to look behind every tree and bush as we ride along, Zadi said.
I realize that, Belgorath answered, tugging at one earlobe. Let me think this through.
And while you're deciding, I will fix us some breakfast, Polgara said, laying aside her hairbrush. What would you all like?
Porridge?
Ariand asked hopefully. Silk sighed.
The word is gruel, Ariand. Gruel.
And then he looked quickly at Polgara, whose eyes had suddenly turned frosty.
Oh, sorry, Polgara. But it is our duty to educate the young, don't you think?
What I think is that I need more firewood, she replied.
I will see to it at once. You're too kind. Silk rather quickly left the room.
Any ideas?
The hunchbacked Belden asked Belgarath. Several, but they all have certain flaws in them.
Why not let me handle it for you?
The gnarled sorcerer asked, sprawling on a bench near the fire and scratching absently at his belly.
You've had a hard night, and a 10,000-year-old man needs to conserve his strength.
You really find that amusing, don't you? Why not say 20 or 50? Push absurdity to its ultimate edge.
My, Belden said, aren't we testy this morning? Paul, have you got any beer handy?
Before breakfast, Uncle, she said from beside the fireplace, where she was stirring a large pot.
Oh, just as a buffer for the gruel.
She gave him a very steady look. He grinned at her, then turned back toward Belgarath.
Seriously, though, why not let me deal with all of the lurkers in the bushes around the house? Keldar could dull every knife he's carrying, and Lazelle could wear that poor little snake's fangs down to the gums, and you still wouldn't be sure if you'd cleaned out the woods hereabouts. I'm going off in a different direction anyway, so why not let me do something flamboyant to frighten off the guardsmen of the Kerans, and then leave a nice wide trail for the Kandim and the hounds? Oh, they'll follow me, and that should leave you an empty forest to ride through.
Belgarath gave him a speculative look. Exactly what have you got in mind?
I'm still working on it, the dwarf leaned back reflectively. Let's face it, Belgarath. The Kandim and Zandramos already know that we're here, so there's not much point in tiptoeing around anymore. A little noise isn't going to hurt anything.
Oh, that's true, I suppose, Belgarath agreed. He looked at Geryon. Are you getting any hints from the orb about the direction Zandramos took when she left here?
A sort of steady pull toward the east is all.
Belden grunted.
Makes sense. Since Irvon's people were wandering all over Katakor, she probably wanted to get to the nearest unguarded border as quickly as possible. That would be Geno.
Is the border between Geno and Katakor unguarded?
They don't even know for sure where the border is, he snorted. At least, not up in the forest. There's nothing up there but trees anyway, so they don't bother with it.
He turned to Belgarath.
Don't get your mind set in stone on some of these things. We did a lot of speculating back at Malzeth, and the theories we came up with were related to the truth only by implication. Well, there's a great deal of intrigue going on here in Meloria, so it's a good idea to expect things to turn out not quite the way you thought they would.
Geryon, Belgarath said from the fireplace, would you see if you can find Silk? Breakfast is almost ready.
Yes, Aunt Paul, he replied automatically.
After they had eaten, they repacked their belongings and carried the packs out to the stable.
Go out through the sally port, Belden said, as they crossed the courtyard again. Give me about an hour before you start.
You're leaving now? Belgarath asked him.
Might as well. We're not accomplishing very much by sitting around and talking. Don't forget to leave me a trail to follow.
I'll take care of it. I wish you would tell me what you're going to do here.
Trust me, the gnarled sorcerer winked. Take cover someplace, and don't come out again until all of the noise subsides.
He grinned wickedly and rubbed his dirty hands together in anticipation. Then he shimmered and swooped away as a blue-banded hawk. I think we had better go inside the house, Belgarath suggested. Whatever he is going to do out here is likely to involve a great deal of flying debris. They re-entered the house and went back to the room where they had spent the night.
Durnik, Belgarath said,
can you get those shutters closed? I don't think we want broken glass sheeting across the room.
But then we won't be able to see, Silk objected.
I am sure you can live without seeing it. As a matter of fact, you probably would not want to watch anyway.
Durnik went to the window,
opened it slightly and pulled the shutters closed. Then, from high overhead where the blue-banded hawk had been circling, there came a huge roar, almost like a continuous peal of swirling thunder, accompanied by a rushing surge. The house of Turek shook as if a great wind were tearing at it, and the faint light coming from between the slats of the shutters Durnik had closed vanished, to be replaced by inky darkness. Then there came a vast bellow from high in the air above the house.
"A demon?"
Tenedra gasped.
"Is it a demon?"
"A semblance of a demon," Polgara corrected. "How can anybody see it when it's so dark outside?" Zadi asked.
"It is dark around the house because the house is inside the image. The people hiding in the forest should be able to see it very well. Too well, in fact."
"It's that big?" Zadi looked stunned. "But this house is enormous," Belgarath grinned.
Belden has never been satisfied with halfway measures.
There came another of those huge bellows from high above, followed by faint shrieks and cries of agony.
"Now what is he doing?"
Tenedra asked.
"Some kind of visual display, I would imagine," Belgarath shrugged. "Probably fairly graphic. My guess is that everyone in the vicinity is being entertained by the spectacle of an illusory demon eating imaginary people alive."
"Will it frighten them off?" Silk asked.
"Wouldn't it frighten you?"
From high overhead, a dreadful booming voice roared.
"Hungry," it said. "Hungry. Want food. More food."
There came a ponderous, earth-shaking crash, the sound of a titanic foot crushing an acre of forest. Then there was another, and yet another, as Belden's enormous image stalked away. The light returned, and Silk hurried toward the window.
"I wouldn't," Belgarath warned him. "But you don't want to see it, Silk. Take my word for it, you do not want to see it."
The gigantic footsteps continued to crash through the nearby woods.
"How much longer?" Zadi asked in a shaken voice.
"He said about an hour," Belgarath replied. "He will probably make use of all of it. He wants to make a lasting impression on everybody in the area." There were screams of terror coming from the woods now, and the crashing continued. Then there was another sound, a great roaring that receded off into the distance toward the southwest, accompanied by the fading surge of Belden's will.
"He is leading the Khandam off now," Belgarath said. "That means he's already chased off the guardsmen and the Kerans. Let's get ready to leave."
It took them a while to calm the wild-eyed horses, but they were finally able to mount and ride into the courtyard. Geryon had once again donned his mail shirt and helmet, and his heavy shield hung from the bow of Kretchen's saddle.
"Do I still need to carry the lance?"
"Probably not," Belgarath replied. "We're not likely to meet anybody out there now."
They went through the sallyport and into the brushy woods. They circled the black house until they reached the east side. Then Geryon drew Iron Grip's sword. He held it lightly and swept it back and forth until he felt it pull at his hand.
"The trail's over here," he said, pointing toward a scarcely visible path leading off into the woods.
"Good," Belgarath said. "At least we won't have to beat our way through the brush."
They crossed the weed-grown clearing that surrounded the house of Turek and entered the forest. The path they followed showed little sign of recent use, and it was at times difficult to see.
"It looks as if some people left here in a hurry," Silk grinned, pointing at various bits and pieces of equipment lying scattered along the path.
They came up over the top of a hill and saw a wide strip of devastation stretching through the forest toward the southwest.
"A tornado?"
Zadi asked. "No," Belgarath replied. Belden. The Kandam won't have much trouble finding his trail. The sword in Geryon's hand was still pointed unerringly toward the path they were following. He led the way confidently, and they increased their pace to a trot, pushing on through the forest. After a league or so, the path began to run downhill, moving out of the foothills toward the heavily forested plains lying to the east of the Kerendiz Range.
"Are there any towns out there?"
Zadi asked, looking out over the forest.
"Akkad is the only one of any size between here and the border," Silk told him.
"I don't think I've ever heard of it. What is it like?"
"It's a pigpen of a place," Silk replied. "Most Kerendiz towns are. They seem to have got a great affinity for mud."
"Wasn't Akkad the place where the Melsine bureaucrat was from?"
Velvet asked.
"That's what he said," Silk answered.
"And didn't he say that there are demons there?"
"There were,"
Belgarath corrected.
"Taradis told us that Nahas has pulled all of his demons out of Karanda and sent them off to Dorshiva to fight the Grolems there."
He scratched at his beard.
"I think we will avoid Akkad anyway. The demons may have left, but there are still going to be Kerendiz fanatics there, and I don't think that the news of Menga's death has reached them yet. In any event, there's going to be a fair amount of chaos here in Karanda until Zakath's army gets back from Tol Murgos, and he moves in to restore order."
They rode on, pausing only briefly for lunch. By mid-afternoon, the clouds that had obscured the skies over Asheba had dissipated. The sun came back out again. The path they had been following grew wider and more well-traveled. It finally expanded into a road. They picked up the pace and made better time. As evening drew on, they rode some distance back from the road and made their night's encampment in a small hollow, where the light from their fire would be well concealed. They ate, and immediately after supper, Geryon sought his bed. For some reason, he felt bone-weary. After half an hour, Zenedra joined him in their tent. She settled down into the blankets and nestled her head against his back. Then she sighed disconsolately.
"It was all a waste of time, wasn't it?"
she said.
"Going to Asheba, I mean."
"No, Zenedra, not really," he replied, still on the verge of sleep.
"We had to go there so that Velvet could kill Herrick, and that was one of the tasks that have to be completed before we get to the place which is no more."
"Does all that really have any meaning, Geryon? Half of the time you act as if you believe it, the other half you don't. If Sandramas had been there with our son, you would not have just let her walk away because all of the conditions had not been met, would you?"
"Not by so much as one step."
"Then you don't really believe it, do you?"
"I'm not an absolute fatalist, if that's what you mean. But I've seen things come out exactly the way the prophecy said they were going to, far too many times for me to just ignore it altogether."
"Sometimes I think that I'll never see my baby again,"
she said, in a weary, sad little voice. "Oh, you mustn't ever think that. We will catch up with Sandramas, and we will take Geryon home with us again."
"Home,"
she sighed.
"We've been gone for so long that I can barely remember what it looks like."
He took her into his arms, buried his face in her hair, and held her close. After a time, she sighed and fell asleep. In spite of his own deep weariness, however, it was quite late before he himself drifted off. The next day dawned clear and warm. They made their way back to the road again, and continued eastward with Iron Grip's sword pointing the way. About mid-morning, Polgara called ahead to Belgarath.
"Father,
There is someone hiding off to the side of the road just ahead.
He slowed his horse to a walk.
Tandem?
No. It's a Malorian Angorak. He's very much afraid, and not altogether rational.
Is he planning any mischief?
He's not actually planning anything, Father. His thoughts are not coherent enough for that.
Why don't you go flush him out, Silk? The old man suggested. I don't like having people lurking behind me, sane or not.
About where is he? The little man asked Polgara. Some distance back in the woods from that dead tree.
He nodded.
I'll go talk with him.
He loped his horse on ahead and reined in beside the dead tree.
We know you are back there, friend, he called pleasantly.
We don't mean you any harm, but why don't you come out in the open, where we can see you?
There was a long pause.
Oh, come along now, Silk called.
Don't be shy.
Have you got any demons with you?
The voice sounded fearful.
Do I look like the sort of fellow who would be consorting with demons?
You won't kill me, will you?
Of course not. We only want to talk with you, that's all.
There was another long and fearful pause.
Have you got anything to eat?
The voice was filled with a desperate need. I think we can spare a bit. The hidden man thought about that.
All right,
he said finally.
I'm coming out. Remember, you promised not to kill me.
Then there was a crashing in the bushes, and a Malorian soldier came stumbling out into the road. His red tunic was in shreds. He had lost his helmet, and the remains of his boots were tied to his legs with leather thongs. He had quite obviously neither shaved nor bathed for at least a month. His eyes were wild, and his head twitched on his neck uncontrollably. He stared at Silk with a terrified expression.
You don't look to be in very good shape, friend. Where is your unit?
Dead. All dead. Eaten by the demons.
The soldier's eyes were haunted.
Were you at the god?
He asked in a terrified voice.
Were you there when the demons came?
No, friend. We just came up from Vanna.
You said that you had something for me to eat.
Dernick, Silk called. Could you bring some food for this poor fellow?
Dernick rode to the pack horse carrying their stores and took out some bread and dried meat. Then he rode on ahead to join Silk and the fear-crazed soldier.
Were you at Akkad when the demons came?
The fellow asked him. Dernick shook his head.
No, he replied. I'm with him, he pointed at Silk.
Then he handed the fellow the bread and the meat. The soldier snatched them and began to wolf them down in huge bites.
What happened at Akkad?
The demons came,
the soldier replied, still cramming food into his mouth. Then he stopped, his eyes fixed on Dernick with an expression of fright.
Are you going to kill me?
Dernick stared at him.
No, man, he replied in a sick voice.
Thank you.
The soldier sat down at the roadside and continued to eat. Geryon and the others slowly drew closer, not wanting to frighten the skittish fellow off.
What did happen at Akkad?
Silk pressed.
We are going in that direction, and we would sort of like to know what to expect.
Don't go there, the soldier said, shuddering. It's horrible. Horrible. The demons came through the gates with howling Karans all around them. The Karans started hacking people to pieces. Then they fed the pieces to the demons. They cut off both of my captain's arms and then his legs as well. And then a demon picked up what was left of him and ate his head.
He was screaming the whole time.
He lowered his chunk of bread and fearfully stared at Zenedra.
Lady, are you going to kill me?
Certainly not,
she replied in a shocked voice.
If you are, please don't let me see it when you do. And please bury me someplace where the demons won't dig me up and eat me.
She is not going to kill you, Bulgara told him. The man's wild eyes filled with a kind of desperate longing.
Would you do it then, lady? I can't stand the horror any more. Please kill me gently, the way my mother would. Then hide me so that the demons won't get me.
He put his face into his shaking hands and began to cry.
Give him some more food, Durnik, Belgarath said,
his eyes suddenly filled with compassion.
He is completely mad. There's nothing else we can do for him.
I think I might be able to do something, Ancient One, Tzadi said.
He opened his case and took out a vial of amber liquid.
Sprinkle a few drops of this on the bread you give to him, good man. It will calm him, and give him a few hours of peace.
Compassion seems out of character for you, Tzadi, Silk said.
Perhaps, the eunuch murmured. But then, perhaps you don't fully understand me, Prince Skeldar.
Durnik took some more of the bread and meat from the pack for the hysterical Malorian soldier, sprinkling them liberally with Tzadi's potion. Then he gave them to the poor man, and they all rode slowly past and on down the road. After they had gone on a ways, Yarian heard him calling after them.
Come back! Come back, somebody! Anybody, please come back and kill me. Mother, please kill me.
Geryon's stomach wrenched with an almost overpowering sense of pity. He set his teeth and rode on, trying not to listen to the desperate pleas coming from behind him. They circled to the north of Akkad that afternoon, bypassing the city and returning to the road some 2 miles distant. The pull of the sword Geryon held on the pommel of his saddle confirmed the fact that Zandramas had indeed passed this way and had continued on along the road toward the northeast and the relative safety of the border between Katakor and Geno. They camped in the forest a few miles north of the road that night and started out once more early the following morning. The road, for a time, stretched across open fields. It was deeply rutted and still quite soft at the shoulders.
Garans don't take road maintenance very seriously, Silk observed, squinting into the morning sun.
Oh, I noticed that, Durnik replied.
Oh, I thought you might have.
Some leagues farther on, the road they were following re-entered the forest, and they rode along through a cool, damp shade beneath towering evergreens. Then, from somewhere ahead, they heard a hollow booming sound.
I think we might want to go rather carefully, until we are past that, Silk said quietly.
What is that sound? Tzadi asked.
Drums. There's a temple ahead.
Out here in the forest? The eunuch sounded surprised. I thought that the Grolems were largely confined to the cities.
This is not the Grolem temple, Tzadi. It has nothing to do with the worship of Torak. As a matter of fact, the Grolems used to burn these places whenever they came across them. They were a part of the old religion of the area.
Demon worship, you mean? Silk nodded.
Most of them have been long abandoned. But every so often you come across one that's still in use. The drums are a fair indication that the one just ahead is still open for business.
Will we be able to go around them? Durnik asked.
It shouldn't be much trouble, the little man replied. The Karans burn a certain fungus in their ceremonial fires. The fumes have a peculiar effect on one's senses.
Oh? Zadi said with a certain interest. Never mind, Belgarath told him. That red case of yours has quite enough in it already.
Just a scientific curiosity, Belgarath.
Yes, of course.
What are they worshipping? Velvet asked. I thought that the demons had all left Garanda.
Silk was frowning.
The beat isn't right, he said.